Hello, world. Welcome once again to This Week in Mormons. We're here for you. It's true.
Help us help you.
Help us understand. I don't know what I'm saying. Nice to be here, though, everybody. Thank you for listening to our little somewhere in between half an hour and an hour discussion.
Welcome to our funny Ukrainian class.
Yes.
How are you, Jeff?
Doing pretty well. Busy week.
On a scale of 1 to 10, are you an 8?
I'm a 9.
Oh, baby, my baby.
But I'd be an 8 in New York, but here I'm a 9. Everything's, you know, hunky-dory, great week. Election this week. Love me some politics. Oh.
Yeah, buddy, how did California do?
No real surprises here. Democrats won, blah, blah, blah. You know. Apparently California is not ready to take part in the taking back of America that Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity have told us about.
So they've taken it back?
Apparently it's being taken back. But it was fun. I have been, you know this, I've been helping out with the campaign and the webpage for a local city council candidate. And he won.
How did he do?
He won.
I attribute all of that to your web prowess.
Yes, to the 10 people a day who would go there. That's all about me. So, good. It's not an easy feat, though. He was allied himself with the mayor. There were two seats open, so the mayor's seat was open. It's, you know, a council manager system, so the mayor's seat.
Are you going to go for the spot?
No.
I think you're ready to make your debut in politics.
It's not even my city. I can't even run there. So
who cares? That's never stopped, say, Jesse Ventura.
So all I'm saying is there were two seats open and the mayor still got his back, and then this guy knocked out an incumbent, which is no small feat in politics. Not easy to take down incumbents in politics.
Yeah. People like what they've got.
Sort of. So I'm very happy for the guy. Congratulations. Good times all around, and I feel sort of a sense of accomplishment, even though I really did very little.
Did you go? Were you in campaign headquarters at any time?
No, I don't think they even really had one.
Back in the day during the Romney election or the presidential election back 2000. When was it? 2010?
I idiot. 2008.
No, 2008. Oh,
why are you so dumb? This year's 2010.
I was thinking I was in 2012. It was daylight savings time. Throws everything off. So I went and volunteered in the Romney office, or like in the Romney campaign, and then went to the Hillary Clinton campaign and volunteered for like an hour there. Like, I just wanted to try a bunch of them out. It's quite the show, man. They do some pretty intense work in those little hoo-ha places. I was in Iowa, so it was like the big state. Everybody's fighting.
Wait a minute, you did work in Hillary's office?
I just wanted to go and check it out. And so we went and volunteered.
You were spying
like
on her.
Made a half dozen phone calls. And then I went to Romney's. We put in signs in old ladies' yards that have called and requested it.
I would just love to see you sitting in a call center lying through your teeth about Hillary's campaign and platform and all the stuff about her that you don't believe in. That must have been fun.
Well, no, I was just like, I was genuinely interested in kind of how the system worked, right? So I just went and played around. The cool thing, like the really funny thing, was the rallies, man. Like the rallies that these guys put on, every one of those signs is made by staffers, and then they just go and like try and find people to hold them up. It's such a crack up. Like they're sitting there making like babies for Hillary Clinton, and then whenever somebody comes in, they'll like give them a fake baby doll and a poster to hold, and you're like, all right,
baby.
Sweet.
Baby doll. Baby.
They're good at what they do, man. They're good at, like, it's the whole machine. I love it. I love politics.
It is amazing. Yeah, politics
are
fun.
What else happened this week? It seemed like there was something else significant.
I went to Utah this week.
Oh, I know what it is. It was Dieter Uchtdorf's birthday.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, on the 6th.
Well, happy birthday, President Uchtdorf.
He got, so there's a big Facebook campaign thing that went around that said, on his birthday for his president or for his present, mention Uchtdorf and bear your testimony on your wall. And there was like 30,000 people that did it.
Yeah. So you remember when we tried that with, was it President Eyring's birthday to get people to buy his book or whatever? Of course, what? Wasn't that? I think that was just something we did though. That wasn't like an actual Facebook viral thing.
Did you put him to the top of the Amazon?
Our goal was to put him on the top of the Amazon list. Didn't happen.
Did you?
I single-handedly cannot do that. I don't handle Amazon's list rankings, I'm afraid.
It's actually not that hard. All you have to do is hit like 35 copies of a book in an hour, and you're pretty set.
Well, there it is for future reference. Does President Uchtdorf even have any books?
What's that?
Does he have any books?
Uchtdorf or Eyring?
Uchtdorf. Eyring has books. Does Uchtdorf have any books?
I think Uchtdorf, if he had a book, he would call it Flying Solo with a backseat passenger called Jesus.
Something like that, yeah, probably.
Or 30,000 feet and cruising to heaven.
Yeah, or Lufthansa after the Blitz. I don't know. There are all kinds of options here. I'm losing my voice tonight.
A man with perfect hair can't be wrong.
Oh, and his hair is beautiful.
It really is, with that little cowlick thing that he propagates. I don't know what he's doing, but he's insulting every missionary comb-over that's ever been.
I don't know what you're saying now. If you'll excuse me,
he's saying, look, you know. I love the Lord, and I can do my hair with a funky style. Everybody else in the Quorum of the 12, all with the full-on, like, comb it straight across. Not the Uchtdorf. And he chews gum when he gives his talks.
No, he does not chew gum.
Yes, there's been two times that he's gotten up there with gum.
No, he has lozenges because he coughs.
Oh, maybe that's true.
Remember last time he was coughing?
I bet he was missing his Ricola.
I have a Ricola in my mouth right now. Not even lying. You can hear it on my teeth. It's right there.
Well, there you go. That's exciting.
Anyway, so in any other news, I went to Utah this week. I drove my grandparents up there for a funeral.
Dude,
in the family.
Was that amazing?
And it wasn't too bad.
Did you did you stop at every Denny's along the way?
There were a number of just rest stops that lasted a very long time. I love my grandparents. So total, the way up took a while. We had some problems. It took like 12 hours to get there.
Are you kidding me? Dude, that'd be
no, that was, and I slept for 2 hours the night before. It was election night. Good luck getting me to try to go to bed at a decent hour on election night. And then I laid there for like 3 hours and couldn't even sleep.
Because you were so excited about Joe Brown, right?
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Elections, driving up, whatever reason I couldn't sleep. We finally got up there, had a great time. You know, did some stuff with the grandparents, stayed with a mutual friend of yours and mine.
Ah, yes, the old metal.
The old metal, and we had a grand time up there. It was fun to go up. Quick trip, but good times all around.
It's very cool.
Yay
good
for
times.
Utah. Oh, good times. I went to this place called O Falafel. Everyone should go there. I love it.
And we're going to move up there in December for a month, yeah?
Yeah, something. I don't know. You're moving there. Everyone's moving there. Sure.
Boy, if I could talk you into that. The times we'll have at random frozen yogurt establishments.
Not only that, TWIM being recorded live with the two of us together.
Before a studio audience. It's just like WKRP.
Can you imagine what it'll be like to do this show? The two of
where
us
we could
person.
Actually see each other.
It's never happened. I have not even seen you in person since we started doing the show.
That's actually funny that's true, eh? What are we on? Like almost 40 episodes. We just
this is episode number 40 right here.
And I'm always in some random city somewhere, and you're always in your apartment.
I'm living the dream in California. And now we're going to move on with the content of this week's show. Get you through it.
By the way, I'm doing fine. Thanks for asking.
No one cares about you. I'm the straight man. You're the comedic foil. So I'm just going to let you go. All right. I want to sort of applaud this article, this find, and sort of make fun of it. I'm straddling the line here. From, well, this is actually from the Deseret News, but the Mormon Times pulled it, so let's give the Mormon Times credit. It's called A BYU Study Finds R-Rating Lowers Movies Profits.
What?
I know. Now, being from Southern California, I am, you know, box office.
Everybody prepare
news.
For Jeff's elitist comments now.
Being from here and knowing that this is the greatest civilization to ever grace the face of the earth, let me explain a few things to you, sir. But really, just growing up, whatever, I mean, you know, you, it's more the norm to follow box office track. Just Hollywood news is a bigger part of life down here. So, you know, I've grown up around some of this stuff. So. I see that article, and the first thing I think is, well, duh, that an R rating lowers a movie's profits. Because PG-13, as this study found at BYU, it found that a PG-13 film, or sorry, rather, an R-rated film will make 25% to 35% less at the box office than a PG-13 film. And now, I don't know what criteria they used, because it's kind of hard to compare. You can't say, hey, this R-rated slasher flick made less than this PG-13
now, for the
summer
record, this
blockbuster.
This was not an obvious observation for me. I was like, oh, they must be making rated R movies for something. Probably for the money.
Well, they do. I mean, everything has its audience. But PG-13 is like the sweet spot for Hollywood. Because there's no restriction as far as who can go and watch it. Only a recommendation, you know, that children under 13, not recommended, but whoop-dee-doo. Compared to R, where officially parents have to accompany you if you are under 17 years old. So there's not that. It's this perfect rating. You'll notice most summer blockbusters are PG-13, not R. You do have, you know, the random R-rated movie that does really well. Sure, that happens. But if you look at the highest grossing movies of all time, basically all of them are PG-13.
Avatar.
Avatar, Titanic, The Dark Knight.
I still don't understand the Titanic strategy. How'd they slip in that nudity in a PG-13?
Because, yeah, and that's a good question to ask because the way they do ratings. Because the nudity was non-sexual in nature.
Ah.
Because he was just painting her like it was art. I know it sounds stupid, but that's
the
reason why.
I wonder how far that argument could be taken in normal life. Well, this nudity is not sexual in nature. I don't see why it's a problem. I'm gardening right now. Why does it matter?
Anyways, check it out. Okay, right now I'm looking at Box Office Mojo, which is a box office tracking website. Okay, I've got a list right here that I... No, highest grossing movies of all time, domestically, okay? And this is unadjusted for inflation. This is just... Don't even get me started on why the movie industry tracks everything, all the rankings by numbers, not by attendance.
I would not dream of getting you started on anything related to movies. In fact, I'm sensing this was a mistake.
No, this would be. Any point is you have Avatar, Titanic, Dark Knight, Star Wars is PG, Shrek 2, E.T., Star Wars Episode 1, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest, Toy Story 3 manages to get in there, but then you got Spider-Man, Transformers, Star Wars 3, Lord of the Rings, Spider-Man 2.
Is there a single rated R movie in the top 25?
You have to get down to number 15, and that's The Passion of the Christ.
Wait, that was the top grossing movie?
Passion of the Christ made $370 million domestically.
Wow.
It
hope Mel Gibson paid tithing on that, because that's just like royalties to Jesus.
He's too busy paying his bail. Hey-o!
Ba-dum-cha!
So anyway, so it's a lot of that. And you got Jurassic Park, Lord of the Rings. You go, you know, there are some random G's and PG's in there. But by and large, you see all these epic movies that make tons of money are PG-13. So that's kind of a known thing. But I do like that they have the actual numbers here, that an R-rated movie generally will make so much percent less. And people seem to like PG-13 because they like the little bit of edge that's there. But it doesn't send them over the edge. Yeah, you know what I mean?
Well, leave it to BYU to figure out why they should make more cool movies for us and less excluding us specifically.
Yeah. So, I get it. I'm glad they made the study. Part of it just makes sense, though, because PG-13 gives you your broadest audience. Here's a great example. Did you ever see Die Hard 4?
Die Hard 4?
Die Hard, the most recent one. Live Free or Die Hard.
Live Free, Die, yeah.
Okay.
PG-13.
That was a, all the other Die Hards have been rated R, and that one was originally rated R, but they cut it to make it PG-13, and it made a, and it made more money that way. That
I did notice. I did notice the yippee-ki-yay mother, and then it just went to an explosion. I was like,
it did.
Brilliant.
And we could have a whole discussion about the ratings board and why they rate movies the way they do. The BYU article cracks me up because some guy says he was taken back when he watched a PG-13 movie that had 2 F-bombs. Yes, because the limit is, I believe, 3 F-bombs you can actually use. Oh, and heavy drug use. You know what movie that had to be? That was totally The Social Network. If it was a... Sorry. I jumped in on me.
Wait,
there was
wait,
a, there
say
were,
that again? What?
Sorry, this guy says he noticed over the years PG-13's movies have gotten, you know, heavier, more intense content, which is true. And one film he saw recently with 2 surprise F-words and heavy drug use. That has to be The Social Network because there were 2 F-bombs and a surprising amount of drug use, which is usually a straight ticket to an R rating. But you saw it.
I didn't know drug use was automatic R.
The ratings board is very, very weird. There are some movies that are made if they show teenagers actually drinking, like sipping alcohol, they automatically get rated R. It's one of the rules. They can be holding alcohol, but if it shows them ingesting it as underage.
Really?
Yeah, so we could save our discussion about the MPAA and its rating ways for another time because it's kind of silly. But and this
I
is coming from
really
me.
Enjoyed
I
Social
even...
Network for the record as you did? A geek. As a
you
geek,
did you like it? You said
yes, I enjoyed it.
No, I loved it. I thought it was a very well done flick. Everyone should see it, even with the F words and heavy drug use.
All right, yeah. So we got another cool bit.
That's all. I'm done.
What?
Yeah.
Are you done?
Talk.
Are you done with your movie tirade, Jeff?
I think I'm done with my tirade. I'm sorry.
All right,
we
believe in the PG-13s now.
I'll never talk about it again. I'm really sorry, Al.
you love your movies. That is one thing. You love Disneyland and you love the cinema. You love it.
I do love Disneyland. That's why I wish I were Disney's ambassador. We didn't talk about that last week. But anyway.
All right. So this is just kind of an aside, like a really cool, make sure you don't miss it. But there's a couple of famous paintings from Carl Bloch, B-L-O-C-H, or Carl Heinrich Bloch.
Bloch.
I think we can just say Bloch. So we've got a bunch of his paintings coming to BYU.
Stop.
And it'll be the first time that this collection has been reproduced. Normally museums go to museums all the time. It's not a big deal, but for this church where that owns a majority of Carl Heinrich Bloch's paintings, this was apparently a really, really big deal. So they have 10 pieces coming over. And they've recreated kind of the church feel with the lighting and the structure where all the paintings are to try and give the most authentic feel that they can. And they will be on display starting next week at BYU's Museum of Art in a show called Carl Bloch, The Master's Hand. So we'll put up one of the pictures.
That's
that
cool.
He's most well known for, the one where he's down at the pool of Bethsaida. Bethesda? I don't know
Bethesda.
How you say that.
Bethesda. Like Bethesda, Maryland.
That sounds
thing.
Better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So he's down at the pool, and there's the guy in the red hat that's looking away, and he's like, Christ
he's with
is
the
lifting up
he's with the lepers down
he's
there.
He's lifting up the tent. Yeah. Yeah. So there's that one, which is really famous, which I would actually love to see. They say that, so supposedly, you're supposed to be very impressed at just the size. That'll be one of the most surprising things is how big these paintings are. So it's actually really cool. I'm genuinely excited to see this because it's something that's where were they even from? They were in some Scandinavian Lutheran church. So somewhere over there. I think he's Dutch. I'm gonna venture out and say it's in Denmark.
That would be neither they might okay, sure. Yes.
Wait, what was that?
Well, they're not Scandinavians. Let's say he's Dutch. Or we could do the unthinkable. Ready for this? And while
I'll
we
get
speak...
Get out the Google machine.
It can
Here
happen.
Here we go.
Danish.
I knew it was a... This,
so he is Scandinavian.
Yeah.
Good
so,
for you.
Anyway, awesome. awesome that we get to go and see those. I am making a point to make it down there in two or three weeks when I actually get to Utah.
Yeah.
And I will report from there. I'm really excited that I get to see these. This is something I've always, like, one of my favorite paintings. And cool that we get to see them here in the States. So,
hey, so awesome. I've got some other paintings you might want to see.
Yes.
15 watercolor paintings by Richard G. Scott. Did you know Elder Scott is a painter?
Oh, I'd love to see those. Where can I see those, Jeff?
Did you know? I had no idea he was a painter. Elder Scott had an interest in painting, watercolors and such. And so he's taken classes and studied it over the years. So 15 of his paintings are going to be on display at none other than the flagship Deseret Bookstore in Salt Lake City. The same Deseret Bookstore where you can get exclusive leather-bound blah, blah, blah that you can only get at that Deseret Bookstore. The same Deseret Bookstore that has an entire fake-looking tabernacle organ for their strictly devoted Motab section. Oh, yes. So, I think it's pretty fascinating that Elder Scott, aside from his many interesting talents, also paints. Good for him. Now,
but the main thing you wanted to bring up about this was the fact that Deseret Book is playing the elitist card once again, yes?
I guess. I am glad. I think this would be cool. If I'm up there, I'm totally going to go see Elder Scott's paintings. But why is it once again the flagship store for Deseret Book? Gets everything. Are these going to go on a national tour? Is the Deseret Book in San Diego going to get them as well to be nice? Or is it no? It'll just be reserved for that Deseret Book. Because everything goes to the Deseret Book in Salt Lake. Everything.
This is one of those things, though. Like, a lot of the apostles have just random hobbies like this that they're, like, amazing at. Like watercolor painting?
I think it's great, and some of it looks pretty good, too. There are a couple pictures here from the Mormon Times.
I'm trying to think of who else I know that has, like, a kind of crazy unique talent like that.
I do.
Do you know any of the other apostles that have, like, what their hobbies are?
I'm not entirely sure. I heard that, I think Hales is, like, a mean banjo player or something like that.
No way, dude. That'd be awesome.
I'm kidding. I'm making things up. I don't know.
I think Packer does a painting or sculpting or something like that.
Yeah. I don't know. If any of you...
I hope Jeffrey R. Holland, or no, I hope Elton Perry plays the bagpipes as a hobby. And I want Jeffrey R. Holland to be a clogger.
No. Elton Perry just knows how to kick people's trash for his hobby.
And Dallin A. Chokes, I would say he actually enjoys building and racing cars.
Okay. Okay. I love everything you're saying right now, except I don't. Yeah, that's okay. If any of you listeners know of any random hobbies by apostles, then please let us know. Let's spread the gossip.
Let's do it. Let's bring it.
Happy day. So that was a bit of an aside. Good place for me to bring it up. Real quickly, article from over on By Common Consent. We thought about touching this one last week, but we didn't have time. This is a post from John, and he discusses a talk given by the first counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, David M. McConkie. And he says, you realize that this talk was an attack on correlated materials in Sunday school, right? And so by correlated materials, of course, he means all the, you know, the fact that the church publishes all the materials that work together to, you know, proclaim the same message in unison and everything and blah, 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 every week. Because in the talk, Brother McConkie offered five basic principles. One, have the right attitude as you teach. Two, read the scriptures. Three, apply the scriptures in your life. Four, pray to have the Spirit with you. And five, follow the promptings of the Spirit. So he says, do you see what is missing? There is no reference to the manual. Not once are we encouraged to open the manuals and follow the lesson. Not follow the manual. Not tailor your lesson to the manual. And so then this poster here gives a lengthy tirade about how much he does not like following the manuals and how this is essentially saying...
<coughs>
Just that.
The Lord is cursing you right now.
I cannot kick this cough, man. Anyway, point is, you know, he's discussing the value of the manuals and the fact that, you know, because a lot of people argue that Sunday school is almost pointless, that it's redundant, that we should go to a 2-hour block even of just Priesthood Relief Society hour, whatever that may be, and then, you know, sacrament meeting. That Sunday school serves no real purpose, and perhaps they're trying to make that better. Now, as a gospel doctrine teacher, I disagree with some of this. Sunday school, of course, I think serves a great purpose.
Well, yeah, honestly, gospel doctrine is that's 90% of what I get out of church when I go on Sunday. Yeah. Like, I go for that little fill-up, and when it's dry and empty and there's nothing there, I leave completely disappointed. And when there's something there, like when it's a good lesson, I come out and I feel like, man, the church was great. You know, like, I know I go there for the sacrament, and that's why I go there, from a strictly, you know, how did church help me this week standpoint, most of that comes from what I get out of the gospel doctrine, the Sunday school hour.
Yeah. And it can be great. I mean, but how often have you been? This could also apply to Elders Quorum or Relief Society or what have you. You know, have you ever been to a lesson when the teacher's basically just cracked open the manual and you're just kind of going through it?
Oh my gosh. Yes.
I mean, what's the point in that? And I think that's why they're not going to the length, or like Brother McConkie said, you know, not to follow the lesson, follow the manual, da 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 da. Of course, we want this unified message in the church every Sunday, but the best lessons I have are when someone is hopefully following the manual for guidance, because there's a reason why the brethren and the Sunday school presidency have tried to create these lessons and these themes and these things we're supposed to work with. But, you know, the best lessons are ones that are thought about, prayed about, and where the needs of a class are met because of confirmation from the Spirit. Go ahead.
And topically, there's no reason why you shouldn't follow the manual, right? Like, if this week's lesson is on the Holy Ghost, teach about the Holy Ghost. But we've gotten to this point where we really do. I mean, like, the people that show up and just read, which we do a lot of it here, like, in the Midwest. I mean, I see it a ton where people just show up and it's really, they just use it as an excuse to not prepare anything, right? They show up and they just start reading from the beginning. And, you know, generally it takes about an hour to read through all of that, taking turns. And, you know, you don't have to, like, no questions will be asked, no nothing. And all the work's done right there. Which, you know, people look at that and there's quite a bit of material in there. And so you can look at that one of two ways. One way is to just let that be all the material. And the other way is to look through there and see if there's anything in there that applies or would support the lesson that you're preparing. And then go and find other supplemental resources or scriptures or whatever else to actually teach your lesson out of, right? I mean, yeah. It's no, so sure. Disappointing. It is so unfulfilling when you show up and they just, like, walk through it. Particularly because it's the exact same lesson for priesthood as it is for Sunday school.
Yeah, that's been a little bit weird this year, too, as we've... even weirder is, what if you actually are going to the Gospel Principles class? You're using the same manual that you're using for Priesthood and Relief Society. So there's a lot of overlap going on right now, and I guess that's okay. But that's valuable. I mean, as I prepare lessons, I just try to see what the main point of the lesson is. And if what's written in the lesson has thoughts and things that support that, then great. Because I also don't want it to be, especially in Gospel Doctrine, just about a point, about a theme. I like there to be a narrative from the Old Testament, because I think that's what helps people learn from something, is learning the stories of whatever piece of scripture we're in and how it applies to our lives, and especially the Old Testament, because it's so, you know, so rarely read by the membership of the church. And sometimes there's not as much stuff to cover a point. Yeah, and I've gone on some very random asides for stuff I felt we need to talk about. I think that's the most important thing, is that Sunday school is valuable, but we have to make it worthwhile. It's not just a way to kill one of our hours during our block and just through it, you know.
Well, honestly, man, like, I think activity wise and, you know, like you just feel so much more fulfilled when you come out of a gospel doctrine class and you really, you know, you can tell that the teacher put some time into it, and that, you know, like the class participated, and there's a kind of a good energy or excitement around the discussion, like people were engaged in it. That makes such a huge difference, especially for people that are like, you know, maybe they come back to church for the first time in a while and they're just trying it out, right? Like when they come mm-hmm. and they get a super dry teacher, church is lame. It's not fun. Like church is supposed to be like fun. You're supposed to enjoy your time there, right? You're supposed to go to church and actually have an enjoyable experience. You're not supposed to go and sit somber and like depressed and leave feeling worse than when you got there. And so as teachers, man, we've got to do a better job of, you know, just creating lessons and actually, you know, not even bringing content that people haven't heard. Like it's not an entertainment hour, nope. But like there's a lot that we can give just by a little bit of effort into pulling out some doctrine, right?
Mm-hmm. So
I'm telling you,
I don't know. Sunday school, I agree. I think it needs some fixing though in the way we approach it, because you see this way that we created everything to have a uniform standard. Even the old missionary discussions, while we were supposed to use them as a guide, how often did you know missionaries who just recited the old six discussions?
Yeah.
You know? And that's why they did away with it, brought in Preach My Gospel. And I could see that depending on how well that goes, you could see a revamp of a lot of ways that we treat classes and teaching opportunities, and perhaps the church will also consider redoing Sunday school and various other classes into a more, I don't want to say a looser format, but in the same kind of style as Preach My Gospel, where they really
that would be interesting.
Encourage
yeah.
teachers to pray about this and that. Obviously, they have to keep a consistent theme, because I don't think it would be wise to do away with the idea that, you know, in this year we're studying the Old Testament, we study the Book of Mormon, the New Testament, that there is an arc to follow with everything.
Well,
how weird would it be to... Just, you know, how weird would it be to do Book of Mormon if we were jumping around all over the place in it? It's good to have that narrative and to follow
yeah.
it from start to finish throughout the year. Anyway, that's all.
Well, and the funny thing is like a good teacher, just like a good missionary back in the day, I mean, they did this already anyway, right? But they'll take away the lesson manual, just like they took away the discussions, because people use it as a crutch and an excuse not to prepare. And, you know, like if you're a good teacher right now, you're going to be doing all of this already. And so if they made a change to it, I mean, it's not going to be that significant at all, really. You're just going to be like, oh, I was already doing this. Which was kind of the same thing that we had with the Preach My Gospel when it came out. They were like, all right, so here's the idea. You're going to teach the same principles. I mean, the gospel hasn't changed, but get this, you're going to use the Spirit. And we're like, haven't we been supposed to be doing that?
Yeah, yeah. No, I know. I remember that too. We were like, isn't that what we're kind of doing anyway? Who would just recite something? So, but sadly, well, it's just nature. It's easier to recite things. So, no one's perfect. I mean, I don't say any of this as if I am the perfect gospel doctrine teacher, because I'm sure I'm not. You know, there's plenty more I could do.
I forgive you.
I'm sure there's people who don't even like going to my lessons, and that's fine. There's things we're all working on, but definitely we need to take more time to pray, to consider, to ponder, and to really hash it out more with the Lord and figure out what we want to do, rather than relying on material given to us and just assume we need to recite it and fill in random information based on a template. I don't think that's any good. So,
yeah. So hey, we got a move. Sorry, I'm
move along.
On.
Move,
but
move.
We've got a follow up on the church arsons.
Stop it.
So yes, we have Patrick Ehat, which we already brought to you last week that we got him,
but now we know his name, Patrick Ehat.
But so he breaks into the churches, starts the fires intentionally, and he did so because, as he confessed, he, as a member of the LDS Church, believed that the church had lied to him.
No,
and I think it was Melanie or Mel on the blog. She made a comment last week that maybe it's a good thing that we haven't gotten much publicity on the arsons as of late, because this is a crazy member of our own church doing this. I just wonder at the motive, though, because somebody lied to him. Like, if you've seen the mugshot of this guy, I mean, I wonder if it was like, He asked maybe some nice young woman out on a date, and she was like, no. And he was like, why? Is it because I look like a crazy man? And she was like, no, that's not it. And he's like, oh, wait, you lied to me. I'm going to burn your whole church down. And I'm saddened to think that it was probably something simple like that.
It is sad, but maybe he has issues, things to figure out.
Dude, look at the guy. Of course he's got
issues. I know.
We
posted his mugshot last week.
Bless his heart. No offense. The man has issues. No offense.
Oh, I love it. Well, what E-Hat? Yeah, Mr. E-Hat. Have fun, Mr. E-Hat. I should have gone to try to see the torched buildings. We should have when I was up in Utah. Dang it.
I could probably describe what it would have been like.
I imagine there would be a lack of building.
More or less.
Among other things, but generally a lack of a building. That's what I'm going for. So I want to tell you, Al, Deseret News
has
a
crazy stuff.
Deseret News has another top 10 list right now.
No.
There's a few of them this week, but this one, top 10, what we just have to watch during the holiday season. Yes, my friends, with Halloween being gone, it's time to pretend it's already Christmas. And so the marketing is there. Retailers are kicking into gear. Thanksgiving barely exists because it is Christmas time. And this is a Christian nation, my friend. It is time to celebrate the holidays.
Yes, keep going.
So Deseret book readers often send in their lists of their favorite holiday films. I'm not sure if they solicited this, if they wanted people to do it. And of course, many people listed It's a Wonderful Life at the top of the most lists.
This is so people stupid. Why does this list exist?
This
at
is
all?
What I also love. The lists came everywhere from Scotland to Texas to Wyoming. Now, I know I'm stupid, but I don't see a huge cultural shift between Texas and Wyoming here, let alone a geographical one. I mean, if it could have been like Scotland to Texas to Japan, maybe. I don't know. Point is, and then of course Utah readers also weighed in because they are very different from Wyoming, which may explain the popularity of the BYU produced Mr. Kruger's Christmas. So what Deseret News is telling you right now is their results are weighted and in no way scientific, because nothing's fair. And if you got a lot of people who went to BYU, they all want Mr. Kruger's Christmas, and more on that in a second. So here we go. Not all these are full movies, but let's just walk through a few of these and let's just see what Al thinks of them. Shall we? It's a Wonderful Life. Yay or nay, Al?
We saw that in the MTC, actually. That was a funny movie. The part where he comes downstairs and he's like, he's making violent love to me, mother. Our mission president in there was like, oh, boy. And all the missionaries cheered and we got scorned for it.
Yeah, I bet you did.
I thought it was hilarious.
Aside from the lovemaking, you think it's a hilarious film. I'm so glad. I laughed the whole time, like when he tries to kill himself.
Yeah, it's really a comedic bit about it's commentary on depression and why that should
it's
be funny.
It's James Stewart's finest comedic hour. He does brilliant work. All right, moving on. A Christmas Carol. That means just any retelling of A Christmas Carol.
Don't
no
care
preference,
really.
Apparently.
Like the movie version, I've never seen one that I was like, oh, that was worth my hour.
Yeah, I think
half.
It's that's too broad for me. Personally, I mean, there's the Muppet Christmas Carol. There's the one that came
Miracle
out last year with
Miracle on 34th Street, Moderate to Fair.
Hey, you're skipping.
Charlie Bound Christmas.
Yeah, Miracle.
It's 25 minutes. Anybody can fit that in.
But everyone loves it. White Christmas is okay. Now, Mr. Kruger's Christmas scares the crap out of me. I think it is so creepy. I think it's because we are cynical and jaded in this weird world of inappropriate relationships between people and what have you, but I watched that and he's just like a creepy old man. I'm like, hey, little girl, come over here. Hey, you left it behind. Let me give it to you.
I still
come
don't know
back.
How we got Jimmy Stewart to act in that movie.
Yeah, I heard he loved Motab a lot, and that's why they have those weird acid trip dreams when he's directing Motab in the play.
Wait, you hear he had what?
I think he loved Motab in real life.
Huh.
And in the thing, he dreams that he directs Motab. It's really awkward. Also, randomly, they don't list the running time for Mr. Kruger's Christmas. They do it for every other film. Anyway, So that, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, people prefer the cartoon to the horrible Jim Carrey movie. A Christmas Story, which I hate. Do you like that movie? The one with Ralphie, yeah. The BB gun.
I've seen it a number of times.
Hate that movie. Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and Elf, which I actually think is a pretty good flick.
Came in last.
Elf has some good moments.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, the claymation one, man, where it's like... Yeah. Cute! She thinks I'm cute! That's another one of those that they put on every year, and then about halfway through when, like, they go to the Island of Misfit Toys as a kid, man, that was scary as heck.
See, when I watch these movies, I watch whatever it is, 24 Days of Bond on FX, when it's all James Bond movies every day.
Okay.
Way better. They talk about whether he's been naughty or nice. And if he beats somebody up, they say naughty. If he seduces a woman, they say nice, or sometimes naughty. It's far more entertaining.
Sounds
That's
tremendous.
All I have to say about that. Thank you, Deseret News. Yeehaw!
Yeah, that's about it. There's a couple other studies done this week that found that Mormon women have fewer babies before marriage and more after. Another
fancy that
obvious tag for you. Like, why are we studying this? I could just ask me. I'll tell you.
Hey, it's just how it is. Just how it is. What was? Oh yeah. What was the? Mormon Times put out another top 10 Northeast place to live as an LDS family. It just never ends.
All right, seriously, people.
So before there was like in the whole country, then there was economically, and now it's just northeastern U.S. cities.
I think the Mormon Times just read a blog post from 4 years ago that talked about how top 10 lists are a great way to churn up SEO traffic.
And they must have.
And people, top 10 lists are so 4 years ago. Quit it with the top 10 lists. Just give me some genuine, legitimate content that you've actually taken time to write. Please.
Oh, Al, but someone could use that same criticism about us.
No, we do real live reporting.
Take some time to generate some real thought out content.
Hey, we generate that thought content in our own special way.
We are, anyway, if you've ever wanted to live in Poughkeepsie, New York, apparently you're allowed to if you're Mormon. Congratulations.
Wait, where's the number one place?
Number one is State College, Pennsylvania, which is actually made it on the national list, so no surprise there. College, Ithaca, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Elmira, New York, Poughkeepsie.
We should go to State College and just be like, we wanted to see the number one place to raise a family in America.
If you're Mormon. It's actually number five in America. This is only the Northeast, Al.
Oh, yeah, pardon me.
Keep it straight, okay?
You talk to anybody from the Northeast, though, and that's how they view America.
You've got to take it easy.
All right, man.
I think that... Didn't we have something about people out of wedlock? Kids out of wedlock? Single moms? Something like that?
Yeah. Utah has fewer babies born out of wedlock.
That's what part of the thing was, yeah. But that was an interesting study that the census is this time around trying to...
It's not an interesting study. How is that interesting?
No. Hey, as a former census worker, let me explain to you how.
Okay.
I'm putting on my authority voice. So, only because before in the census, it's always listed women as just single moms, if they exist. But nowadays, women can be single legally, but they're still with a man, raising someone. They're just not married. Those people are still considered single moms in a weird way. So, the census this time around is trying to better differentiate between actual single moms who are alone raising kids and unmarried women who are still in a relationship or have a man, or even a woman in this case, have a partner raising a child. So they're trying to draw that distinction, which I think is important because as much as we don't condone, you know, living in sin, as we say, or what have you, it is good to draw that distinction to make it clear that there are a lot more people living in situations where they have two parental figures raising the child, even if they're not married.
That is interesting.
See, I told you so.
I stand corrected, Jeff.
It's okay. I'm not trying to correct you. I just want to bring you hope.
Well, cool, man.
Thanks for listening to our 40th episode, everyone.
Happy 40th birthday, Twin.
We thank the thousands of you who have listened to our episodes thus far.
Tell your friends. Facebook.com/Twitter.
That does not make sense.
Facebook.com/ThisWeekInMormons and Twitter.com/TheRealTwim.
You think you're so clever, don't you?
Come say hi.
You just think you are so
Jeff,
clever.
Jeff, I am witty. Borderline clever. Absolutely.
No, I invented clever.
Okay.
Actually, I really didn't. You are far and away the comedic beacon of this production. So I thank you for that.
I am the cleverest. Just like that Ben Folds song. The first time.
As Aaron Neville would say, I don't know much, but I know how I love you.
Oh, Linda Ronstadt, where are you now?
Thank you.
All right, man.
That's going to be it, everybody. Have a good week, friend.
See you, bro.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to our lovely show, and we hope to hear from you soon. This has been another edition of This Week in... Okay, Mormons. I was going to say mathematicians. All right. Bye.